This conference is being recorded.
Okay, I'll start over. So in preparing for this call, this 8-day call, we're on day one. One of the first things that I did was I reviewed the registration forms. And the first question that we asked you was, what are your greatest challenges? And it was interesting going through them because some of them are very repetitious and some of them I could certainly put into probably three different categories. But I could feel the pain instantly as I start reading these. And a lot of the recurring themes were things like, I'm spread too thin. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. There's not enough of me to go around. You've said things like, I'm worried about my finances. Things aren't happening fast enough. I need to find a niche with all this competition. I mean, I could just feel the angst and the pain and, you know, what you're feeling as I'm reading these things. And then other people ask some great questions about marketing and what about referrals and how do I get clients and how do I keep clients and how do I get them to spend more. And those are all great questions. And then some ask even more specific business strategy and planning questions such as, you know, how do I become known as an expert? How do I start speaking? How do I go from one-on-one to groups? Or how do I transition full-time into training? And how do I hire employees? And when is the right time? And do I offer coaching and nutrition? And these are all great questions, and they excite me, and I love to hear these questions. And what's interesting is that the questions you're asking today are no different than the questions that Phil and I have been hearing for 20-plus years. So regardless of the way our economic downturn might be, these are still the same questions and issues that everyone is facing. So really we're narrowing them down to life management and business management. Those seem to be the biggest issues. But my favorite thing was the second question that we asked you, which was, if all of these challenges were met, then what would you expect? What would be different? And what's great about that is that every one of you said, ah, what would be great is that I'd be making a lot more money, and I'd work a lot less, and I'd be on vacation, and I'd work without losing income, and I'd be able to choose who I work with, and I'd be able to reach more people, I'd play with my kids, I'd have a 2 years' worth of living expenses in the bank, I'd get another degree, and you know, basically a lot of those things come down to having more freedom, which is one of the things that we'll cover on the call. But I love that you ask these questions because it shows me that you know that there's more, but somehow you got stuck. And it doesn't mean you're not smart, or anyone is smarter than you are who might appear more successful, or it doesn't mean that you can't create the resources that you need, but you might need some more information. You might need to be open to some change. You may need to be more coachable. So we're going to be talking to you about some ideas that are going to require you to change. And I want to let you know that change is absolutely possible. And everyone on this phone is a personal trainer. That's what the unique thread is. But you all might be doing something different or some combination. Some are in-home trainers. We've got trainers who work in clubs. Some have their own studios. Some have boot camps. So we have a variety of here. But everyone that we're going to be speaking to today, we're addressing you each as personal trainers. And Phil Kaplan and I have done all of those things. And we are living proof that personal trainers can be respected, that they can earn a respectable income, that they can lead lives that are in line with other revered professionals. And those are some of the things that we're going to talk to you about how you can do these things as well. So speaking of Phil, I'm going to introduce him. And Phil is very, very modest, and he would never brag on himself, so I'm going to do that for just a minute. Phil is a coach who is absolutely genuinely committed to your success, and he won't even call himself a coach. If you were to meet Phil in a restaurant, he will tell you that he is a personal trainer. But he's a personal trainer that has been so successful because of his expertise, because of the systems he's created, and his perspective is just head and shoulders above anyone in the industry. And I can tell you that from honest experience. I've hired many, many consultants. I've gone to literally hundreds and thousands of seminars and listened to audio programs, but Phil spent over two decades studying and really thinking about the business of personal training from every single aspect. He is a true expert, and we're going to talk about some of the people who are touting themselves as true experts, but maybe are not. But Phil's taken just about everything that's been done in the personal training industry. He's studied it, he's done it, he's synthesized it, and he's found out ways to do things a little bit differently in ways that to do them that are very profitably. So he's an innovator. He's extremely consistent in everything that he does. He never changes course, and he sees the big picture. And that's one of the greatest things about hiring a coach, because we're not emotionally tied to your situation right now. We care about you. We genuinely want to help you. But sometimes when you're too deep in it, it's hard for you to see the changes that you need to make. So in the next 8 days, Phil's going to help you grow in your business and help you enjoy your life as well. And that's honestly what we want you to do. We want to get you to get to that question number two, to the point where you would know that you hit that level of success and you can enjoy all of those things you listed. Phil?
Let me start by telling you that I'm not paying attention to the clock because it's stressing me out, Kel. I keep looking at the clock, and I just made a deal with myself. I'm not looking at the clock anymore. So we may go 75 minutes today because I know I have a lot I want to cover, and I'm going, oh, man, we're never going to cover it all. I'm not looking at the clock. So we might go longer than 75 minutes. I have a message that I want to get out to you, and I'm going to trust my gut as to at what point the message is delivered. So if you blocked out 75 minutes today and the call goes longer, it's okay. You will have received the main impact of the points that I want to make within the first 75 minutes, even if I keep going. You will also, after the 8 days, have access to downloadable audio from the entire program. So anything you miss, if you have to leave at the 75-minute mark, consider that you'll be able to get the extra afterwards when the program is complete. Now, over the 8 days, we will speak in this forum 4 times, this being the first. On the days in between, you can expect me and Kelly to email you what I call directives. They're more than homework assignments. Think of them as missions with a beneficial outcome. Each mission is attached to a beneficial outcome. And even if, when the directive is assigned, you can't make sense out of the link between the assignment and the benefit, you're going to go, how's this going to help me? I'm going to ask for your trust. Don't take the directives lightly. The lessons will empower you, but the directives will change you. My intention is simple. As Kelly expressed, I want to help you get to a better place 8 days from now, a place where you can see your way clear to the prosperity that can be the result of your decision to choose personal training as a profession. I'll also tell you at the onset, this program will be complete. There isn't any need to connect with me or connect with Kelly any further after these 8 days. You will have enough tools to achieve anything that you can fathom as possible. But with that said, at the end of the 8 days, there will be opportunities to connect further, one of those opportunities being my Be Better program, the second being a brief but directed consultation with myself and or with Kelly Calabrese. Okay. You should have a pen and something to write on. And I know we don't use pens anymore. We use computers and we use our phones. Get a pen or a pencil or something to write with and something to write on. And I want to make sure that during this call, we have your full attention. No distraction. If there's a television on, turn it off. If you're checking emails, stop. I would guess right now 14 people stopped. You want to give this your all. I know we multitask, you know, and stuff's coming at us from everywhere. But for the next 75 minutes and maybe 75 minutes plus, just direct your attention to the content of this call. Treat this as if it's a workshop and you are sitting 10 feet from me right now in the front row. So now, imagining that you are 10 feet away, you have a front row seat to my 5-second play. Yes, I'm going to perform a play right now. In this play, I'm going to play two roles. First, I'll be Buddy, and then I'll be Pal. Why those names? Because apparently I am mistaken for those two people frequently. Wherever I go, salespeople or guys I don't know in the gym say, hey, Buddy, or hey, Pal. Clearly, it is a case of mistaken identity. But for the sake of this play, I think they're ideal names for my characters. Okay, so the play is about to begin. Here we go. Buddy begins. Here's Buddy's line. Hey, Pal, how are you? Now Pal responds. Good, Buddy. And you? Then Buddy's dramatic closing line. Good. Okay, now I'm going to repeat that dramatic scene, just allowing the dialogue to flow, since you now have connected well with both my heightened acting talents and the characters. Here we go. Hey, Pal, how are you? Good, Buddy. And you? Good. Okay, maybe it isn't much of a play. Maybe it won't make Broadway, but it's a scene that plays itself out every day. I don't know how many tens of thousands of times in workplaces, in health clubs, in shopping centers, in colleges, in bars, at baseball stadiums, in restaurants, and pretty much anywhere that human beings gather. How are you? Good. I hear that a lot. How are you? Good. Hey, man, how are you? Good. Hey, buddy, how are you? Good. How are you, pal? Good. It's so ordinary. Now, ordinary isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing for ordinary people. I mean, if you're an ordinary person, then certainly it's good to be ordinary. As a matter of fact, I think if you ask someone how they are, and they say, good, that might even be a step beyond ordinary. I'll tell you why I say that. I say that because many people answer the question differently. You ask the question, how are you? And they'll respond not with the one word, but with two words. Not bad. How are you? Not bad. Now think about that. It's sort of an odd response, isn't it? It's almost like someone asks you how you're feeling and you say, I don't have pneumonia. How are you? I don't have a venereal disease. How are you? I'm not coughing up thick wads of mucus today. We don't say those things. So why would we think that people expect us to be bad? How are you? Oh, a giant python didn't strangle and eat me. Isn't the not bad response suggesting that we'd expect them to be feeling bad? Isn't it sort of weird that societally people do that? How are you? Not bad. I didn't think you were bad. Why would you say not bad? I have studied psychology and influence almost to the point where you might call it an obsession. And I find language to be very revealing. Talk to someone for 5 minutes, and if you know what cues to look for, you can walk away understanding so many things about their mindset, their emotional state, their perspectives, and their momentary potential to do something extraordinary. Now, in all honesty, it is rare that I meet people who are positioned in a given moment to be extraordinary. But I do meet those people. I love connecting with those people. And I believe that you're here because you want to be one of those people. If that is the case, if you want to be extraordinary, let's get clear. You can do extraordinary things. If you're willing to step outside of convention, step outside of the norm, if you're willing to challenge the thinking that brought you where you are today, and if you're willing to invite a sense of adventure into your life that your present mindset might cause you to initially resist, you're going to face a little bit of an internal struggle, and maybe more than a little bit. Because I'm going to pull, and I'm going to push, and I'm going to prod, and a part of you is going to want to go along, and another part of you is going to go, no, 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 don't do that. Now, I don't expect to change you today. I have 8 days to do that. Or perhaps a better way to say it is, if I give this project my all, I can inspire, persuade, and compel you to change your thoughts. And in going through a change in thinking and perspective, you will find a new sense of potential for yourself. So the truth is, you'll do it, not me. Very much as your clients bring about their own results, even though you are the catalyst. You start them. But really, they deserve the credit, don't they? So much as you initiate change in your clients, Kelly and I may initiate change in you. And we don't take that responsibility lightly. But in this 8-day period, accept this up front. It's up to you to make the change. It will not happen by simply listening to the calls. You need immersion. Here's what I know. You can, if you choose, become better than you are right now. You can, if you choose, create a life and a circumstance better than the life you're living today, even if the life you're living today is good or not bad. You can invite an entirely new mindset that gets you reconnected with the fuel and the passion that once convinced you that being a personal trainer was a great idea. Or for some of you, reconnecting with the belief that personal training is your destiny. If you're willing to do the things that Kelly and I ask, both in the lessons and in the directives. Life is about to change for you in ways I can't even begin to predict, but I can promise you this. That juice that you once had, the excitement that you once imagined about loving the life personal training brings you, can come back until you are so immersed in it, you wonder why the passion got bottled up for so long. Now, I know right now, you instinctively want to say, no, Phil, my passion's not bottled up. I still have the passion. It's here. I know you have the passion, but you're a part of this project because you want something better. And when you start to get a taste of what your mind and your ambition are about to bring you, you'll realize how the passion slowly and subtly got watered down as you became surrounded by your present reality. Sure, you could find it if you dig, but it's not like it used to be. I promise you that, and it will be. Whatever the reality that you're living is right now, you can completely change it in these 8 days, only if you're willing, if you're open-minded, and you're committed. Are you? No need to answer out loud, or you can answer out loud if you want because you're muted. I'm not asking you so you can answer me. I'm asking you so you'll think about it. Are you really willing, open-minded, and committed? Just decide for yourself. Are you really willing to change? Are you really open-minded enough to accept some new ideas? And are you really committed to betterment? If you just found yourself nodding your head or thinking the words, yes, I'm committed, you've taken the first tiny step. Now, if you aren't sure, then get sure. Remember, we will give you tools, but you're going to have to make this happen, and commitment is a prerequisite. Now, before we go any further, let me prepare you. Going through the type of changes that I'm going to work to initiate will hurt. It will hurt your brain. It will hurt your mind. And whatever voices talk to you from inside your head when you're driving or after you turn off the television, they will torture you for a few days. And I'm telling you, expect this. Now you're starting to go, what did I get myself into? You start to get yourself into change. And it's a part of the process. It's almost like taking a lifetime golfer who's pretty good or not bad and telling him how to improve his golf swing. It screws him up because you interrupted an automatic process, and now he has to struggle with new thoughts and old habits until he creates some new links inside his brain. Only when his brain forms those new communication structures, only when he integrates the new actions beneath the conscious level, will the better swing become automatic. So he will get there, but at first it is mentally and emotionally painful. Expect that same strain to arise in you over the course of the next few days. Would you like to see the state of discomfort I'm talking about? Find someone in your life who says the word like as a placeholder a lot. Their habitual mode of communication sounds like this. And before I attempt this, I want you to know this is material that I gathered this morning as I accidentally eavesdropped on three members of my health club while I was waiting for my post-workout reload shake at the juice bar. Okay, I heard somebody speaking just as I'm about to speak to you. As an example, this is just an example of someone's dialogue when they allow the word like to invade their conversations. Here goes. I was like, oh my God. And then he like stands by the mirror, checks himself out, and like totally flexes. So like everyone in the whole place is like working out, and he's like trying to say, notice me, I'm like the personal training god. So I like look at him like, who do you think you are? And he like doesn't know what to do, and then he like starts walking toward me, and I can tell he's like trying to be like bad, right? So I just smile, and he asks me if I've ever worked out with a trainer, and I'm like, I know how to work out. That was barely, I'm proud of myself, that was pretty good. That was barely an exaggeration. I don't even think I got enough likes in there. So you know somebody in your life who speaks that way, who just uses the word like inappropriately often for no reason. If you know somebody who does that, just get their attention and say this. Do you know you say the word like a lot? They will literally forget how to talk. I am not kidding. Try it. It's because once you bring something that happens automatically to their conscious attention, they'll keep catching themselves, and they'll try not to say it. And the only way at first they'll know how not to say the word is to stop talking. You want to see them tortured? Tell that person that they say like a lot and just watch what happens. Then, over the next week or so, one of two things will occur. The conscious mind will choose to forget your comment, and the old habits will again become, like, comfortable. Or that person will make a conscious decision to change. And eventually the mind will rewire itself, and the change will become lasting. Now, I'm not suggesting that changing your language completely changes your outcomes, but if you realize that your language is a reflection of attitudes and instilled habits, you'll realize through a wiring system, it's all connected. I wish it were as simple as just asking you to change your response to the how are you question. It isn't that simple. As a matter of fact, when you ask someone how they are and they say something like, outstanding, and you know people who say that, that's often pretentious. It may be well-intentioned, but it's a surface change. It's not a real change. You know, they went to some seminar and they were told, you know, when somebody says, how are you doing? Just say, outstanding, and your life will change. It's not enough. And when they say outstanding, it's usually smoke. And if you get that person to lower his or her guard, you'll soon be on the receiving end of a complaint attack. Just get past the outstanding and find out what's really going on, and you'll regret that you ever took it that far. So I will mess with your thinking right now with all good intentions by asking you to recognize two words when they show up in your life. Here they are. The words are but and can't. I've done it. From this moment forward, expect a little bit of mental torture. Recognize the words when they show up, but and can't. Can't becomes a reality. And you will notice it in others as much as you'll notice it in yourself. You'll be surprised how often it shows up in your thought process or even your verbal language. But you'll get really good at identifying the mistake when can't is used too often by other people. When someone says, I can't work out in the mornings, that doesn't mean they can't work out in the mornings. They say, I can't work out in the mornings. You know it doesn't mean they can't. If they're living, breathing, and functioning at 7 a.m., and if they are not bound to a chair or imprisoned by a straitjacket, they can work out in the mornings. They either don't want to, or they don't want to initiate the changes they would have to make in order to work out in the mornings, or they believe they are victims of the circumstances that make up their days, or perhaps they haven't yet opened up to the possibility that they can affect the people and things that may on any given morning prevent them from exercising. The challenge lies in the fact that the word can't is revealing of an instilled belief. The person who says that believes what they're saying. You know it's not true, but to them, 100% true. You know they can. They know they can't. So in their mind, they're right. The challenge lies in changing the belief. Even though you may know this person can work out in the mornings, until you change the belief, the can't becomes a reality for that person. Now, you're going to get very good at understanding that and recognizing that in other people. I'm suggesting you hold up the mirror a little bit. Right now, you may say, I don't say can't a lot. Okay. But just start to notice. When that voice in your head says, you can't make money as a personal trainer, realize that you have a choice over whether or not you want to keep that belief. You become very attached to it. It may serve you in many ways, but it's a choice. You can decide. Once you identify it, you can decide, do I want to keep that belief? Is that good for me? And if you want to make money as a personal trainer, the belief has to be destroyed or changed. Now remember this. It may be the most powerful thing I share with you. If you want to change an outcome for any human being, you have to change a belief and or an emotion. That is so vitally important, I'm going to say it again. If you want to change an outcome, you have to change a belief and or an emotion. Now, before you can change a belief, especially in yourself, you're going to want to identify it. And that's why, just as you'll identify how obviously your clients are limiting themselves when they say they can't eat breakfast, or they can't get 6 hours of sleep, or they can't quit smoking, you're now going to catch yourself saying can't. And in the short term, it'll drive you crazy. The other word that's going to catch your attention is the word but. But disregards everything that came before it. Man, I know I should stop drinking so much on the weekends, but... See, the but, as soon as that but shows up, it means even though I'm telling you I know I should back off on drinking, I'm not going to. But is perhaps more crippling than can't, because you can delude yourself into thinking you're open-minded when you use the word but. Rather than I can't make money in this economy, you think I can make money in this economy, but my clients aren't willing to train as often. The two statements have the exact same effect. They are both beliefs that prevent you from pursuing new options. They limit you. They prevent you from seeing new possibility. So the first thing I'm going to do, in fact, I've already done it, is to ask you to start to identify the words but and can't in your own internal and external dialogue. Now, don't drive yourself crazy trying to figure yourself out. Say, why do I do that to myself? Whereas I can't stop. I can stop, but I can't. Don't do that. You'll make yourself completely nuts, and that's not the goal here. Just notice that these words show up. That's it. That's all I want you to do right now. Just notice them. Together, over the next 8 days, we'll get them to go away. It's got to start with you identifying that they're there. Now, but and can't are much more important right now than the answer to the how are you question. But since I mentioned it, you're also going to now be aware of what you say and what others say when faced with the three words in the question mark. How are you? So if after this call, because I said, you know, everybody says, good. How are you? Good. And that reveals you to be ordinary. How are you? Not bad. You know, and that seems silly. Why would you say not bad? They didn't think you were bad. So now that I've pointed that out, you're going to be aware of it. And somebody's going to say to you, how are you? And you might freeze. Recognize that as evidence that things will be different now. Catching yourself is evidence of a new awareness. Now, when you're asked how you are, and you respond by saying, good, you'll catch yourself revealing yourself to be ordinary, and it will bother you, and that's good. If you want to make it better than good, try something. Try to develop, only for 8 days, a new habit, just for kicks. When someone asks you how you are, answer with a single word. Here's the word. Better. How are you? Better. Now, that's not an ordinary response. And it'll firstly connect you with the sense that things are improving, right? You're going to say better, and you're going to feel that. You're going to, yeah, things are better. Secondly, it'll prompt some questions, some new dialogue in your life. Imagine if people approached you tomorrow and said, hey, tell me how your world is better today than it was yesterday. Right? Imagine if people just came up to you and said, tell me, I'm not asking you if it is, I know it is, just tell me how your world is better today than it was yesterday. That would direct your mind to seek out some new reference points, wouldn't it? By answering how are you with the word better, you'll direct your mind to find the answers to a new question. How is your world better today? So there's a simple directive. Beginning right now, when someone asks you a general question ranging from how are you to how are things going, answer with a single word, better, and just see what happens. Now, right now, in this very moment, you can respond by telling yourself, you can't do that. Or it's stupid. And then you realize, when you said, I can't do that, it's stupid, you've confronted the enemy, the word can't. Or you might respond by saying, sure, I could do that, but it won't make a difference. And instantly, you are face to face with your but problem. So, we've touched on mindset. And you're now going to find a bit of stimulating discomfort. Now, let's talk about why we're personal trainers. I'm going to see if I can get somebody quickly to unmute *6 and just tell me in a sentence or two, why did you become a personal trainer? Can anybody do that? Anybody, just *6, say your name. I'll acknowledge you and just tell us why. Who's this?
This is Crystal.
Hello, Crystal. Why did you become a personal trainer?
I became a personal trainer because of my own journey to better myself.
Because of your inner journey to better yourself. Now, why didn't you just continue to better yourself? Why did you feel a need to do something outside of you?
Because when I bettered myself, I was getting confronted on how I did it, and then I helped other people when I saw that there was a need.
Ah, you helped other people, and you found an emotional reward in that. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Star 6 to mute. If I ask the question a zillion times, and a zillion would be a lot, if I ask the question a zillion times to a zillion personal trainers, and I don't even know if there are a zillion, but if there were, ultimately they would all tell me the same thing. We love helping people. You know what I say to that? Good. And I mean that. Good. And then they could take it further. They go, we have passion for fitness. Good. Want more? I'll give you more than every personal trainer can say. We understand how to make both short-term and long-term changes in the human body by using interventions incorporating exercise and nutritional shifts. Now, they may not say it in those words, but ultimately that's what it's going to boil down to. And you know what I say to that? Good. Love helping people, have passion, know how to get people fit. Good. Is that enough? Well, it's ordinary. And Crystal, don't take that wrong. It's the beginning. Because you got to be ordinary before you're extraordinary. And I'm sure there's so much more to you. But the statement itself is ordinary. I would say if you pursued a certification and you pursued the acquisition of clients to satisfy your passion, and if you feel there's something emotionally rewarding about spreading the word of fitness, and you're okay with being an ordinary personal trainer, then it is enough. But that has nothing to do with your profession. Now, wait a minute, Phil. How can I be a personal trainer, even an ordinary one, and have you tell me it has nothing to do with my profession? Good question. Let's examine what we mean when we discuss a profession. Here's a dictionary definition. Activity pursued as a livelihood. An occupation such as law, medicine, or engineering that requires considerable training and specialized study. Okay, now, even if you're just training people for kicks, it is possible that you have considerable training and specialized study, but let's not forget the first part of that. Activity pursued as a livelihood. A profession isn't a hobby. There are people who fish because they love to. And there are people who fish because they're hungry. And there are people who fish because they get paid. It's their livelihood. They are fishermen or fisherwomen or fisher people. It is possible to fish and not have it be your profession. Likewise, it is possible to personal train and not have it be your profession. Profession is linked with livelihood. Livelihood is a source of self-support, a source of sustenance. So we have to add in, if we do want to pursue personal training as a career or profession, that it must allow us enough compensation so we can sustain our lives. If it doesn't, it is not your profession. Now, I know that I'm kind of treading on some weird territory here because there are some personal trainers, maybe some of you, who feel that the pursuit of money is somehow degrading or that it runs counter to the good that we do for people. So I would say if you feel that way, if you really, really feel that way, and you want this to be your profession or career, then I'm not asking you to be a rich personal trainer. If that goes against your grain, don't be that. But at the very least, it has to bring you enough compensation so you can afford food, shelter, and whatever you deem necessary. Now, of course, if you want cable, there's a fee for that. Or wireless, there's a fee for that. And if you want to eat in restaurants sometimes, there's a fee for that. So you've got to make that decision. Do you want to get compensated just enough to survive? Or do you want cable and wireless and dessert every once in a while in a restaurant? Now, I'm not suggesting that we see our clients as vehicles to allow us luxuries, but I will say this. You have an ability and a power that most people can only wish for. I want you to appreciate that. You can deliver extreme value to others, extreme value. And if you are simply compensated as you deserve, then you have the ability to get the things that are important to you, not by ripping people off, but by bettering the lives of others. You have the ability to get the things that are important to you by bettering the lives of others. If you're really passionate about personal training, then revel in the fact that you can do what you love, make people happy, and as a result, if you accept some new emotions and new beliefs, you can, in the process, acquire whatever things and outcomes will make you feel a sense of reward, a sense of significance, and a sense of pleasure. So let's reframe. If you are compensated fairly for being of service to others, if you are justly paid for the good you do, personal training can become your profession and can take you way beyond sustenance into a place of comfort, a place where you work hard and you love working hard and you never feel you have to look outside of your career for the power to get the things you want in life. Let's call that state a state of professional prosperity, a place where you love what you do, you are compensated fairly, and what you do for a living allows you the power to do the things you want to do. Kelly used the word freedom earlier. It's a great word. That's what it is. Wouldn't it be nice if your choice of becoming a personal trainer really gave you ultimate freedom? It's a choice that if you haven't made yet, make it now. Here's the best part. Growth is self-perpetuating. If you allow your power to change other people, if you allow that power to flow, and you're compensated fairly, if you redirect some of that power back into your ability to help people, and you continue to deliver value, and you continue to find just financial reward, and this is such an important part of it. The giving out is important. I know all of you do that. But you've got to make sure that it is coming back to you, at the very least, in line with what you put out. So if you continue to deliver value and find just financial reward, you continue to grow only by helping more and more people. And if you're going to tell me you can't do that, or you can, but recognize what's happening here. Here's a simple way to frame things. This is the way I frame things in my 8-month Be Better program. Your business should be the source of your prosperity. Your business should be the source of your prosperity. Let me ask you a question. Who are you? Who are you? If the answer was, I'm a personal trainer, that's nice. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not bad. But it's unhealthy if the vision is to have this become and remain your career. If I ask you what you do for a living, then it's noble to say you're a personal trainer, and it's healthy. But if you are your business, you're going to crash and burn one way or another. Has anyone here ever felt the conflict of your business and life being too intertwined? I don't want you to unmute yet, but I'm going to ask somebody in a minute. If you could just unmute and give me an example of an episode in your life, not yet, where you had a hard time finding the boundaries, where it felt like it's all the same, who you are and what you do. Maybe a friend asks you to train them for free. So now, are you the friend or are you the trainer? And if you're the trainer, shouldn't you be paid? But how could you get paid? It's your friend. It's confusing. Or maybe someone takes advantage of your time by asking ongoing fitness questions. And sooner or later, you want to go, stop asking me. This is what I do for a living. But you don't, because you don't have the boundaries. Or maybe a client asks you to a social event, and his or her friends all expect free advice about fitness. And you want to go, hey, I'm here to have fun. Leave me alone. I'm not at work right now. But you don't do that. You just give the free advice. On one of our calls, Kelly and I discussed the concept of we reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. You've heard that saying, and it's true. We reap what we sow. But that doesn't mean, as a personal trainer, you're going to become a missionary and just help everybody and find money in your bank account. You can become a missionary if that's what you want, but the money won't show up in your bank account. So we got to qualify that reap what we sow statement. You have to know what you're trying to reap, and you have to sow with that end in mind. If you sow 3 sessions, you reap $0. Kelly, can you talk a little bit about the concept and how it applies of we reap what we sow?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. Some might call it fate or luck or truth or a miracle, but it's a universal principle of life that the more we share, the more we have. And what we do shows who we are to ourselves and to the people who we influence. And Muhammad Ali said something one time. I know he was hit in the head a lot, but he said some things of value. And one of the things that he said was that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands at moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. And basically what that means is that when we're doing well, it's easy to give stuff away and share. When our needs are taken care of and we've got everything we want, then sure, we'll give of a little bit of our time or our money or our resources. But how many people have you seen that have come into money, whether it was an inheritance or a lottery or even a Christmas bonus, and they just blow it all because of immaturity maybe? Yet there's others who are at their lowest point. They have very little to give, yet they find a way to give. And you may have also seen some people who spent the first half of their lives earning all their money, as much as they could earn, and the second half of their lives giving it away. How great is that, to be able to leave a legacy on your life, whatever it is that's important to you? Maybe it's building libraries or helping battered women or whatever it is that's important to you. You truly magnify your character by giving things away, what we call planting seeds. And a lot of us, most of us, spend every dollar and then some, spending it on nice clothes, nice homes, nice cars, electronics, and we just want more and more and more. And our whole attitude is, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? And I saw a recent survey that showed that the average person who earns $100,000 a year, that 30% of them couldn't go more than 1 month. They don't have more than 1 month of living expenses, and they own over $100,000 a year. And I'm certainly guilty. I'm not pointing fingers. I love nice stuff as much as anybody else, and I certainly have not always put my money in the best places. And when I think about it, I could cringe over places that I've wasted money on stuff that might be worth 10 cents on the dollar now, if that. But if we go to the literal sense of reaping and sowing and think about a farmer, they could never grow a crop if they didn't first plant seeds. And your personal growth is going to require that you give something back. And it could be money. It should be money. It could be time. It could be talent. But if you're not giving, you're absolutely missing out on an opportunity to benefit. And you might say, Kelly, are you crazy? Didn't you see the things I wrote when I talked about my challenges? I have no time. I have no money. Well, you know what? Start small. Give something. It just reminds us that the world does not revolve around us. And anyone who has small children know that that's what children believe. Well, you know what? We're adults. And, you know, good things are set in motion in your life and in your business when you give of your time and your money. And I know this personally, and I've seen it with other people. And here's a recent example. There's a church that I go to, and several months ago they said, anyone who doesn't have a job right now, stand up and come to the front of the church. We want to pray for you. They prayed for them, and they gave every one of them a $100 gift card, and they said, use it however you need it. They wound up giving out $9,300 in gift cards that weekend. The next weekend they said, if you don't have a job, stand up. Come to the front. We want to pray for you. And then they said, we want you to bring your utility bills into us this week, and we want to pay them for you. They paid $64,000 in utility bills. And then the next weekend they said, if you don't have a job, stand up. Come to the front. We want to pray for you. And when the people came to the front, they said, this week we're going to provide you with haircuts. We're going to give you seminars and help you write your resume. We're going to have a suit exchange where if you need a suit for an interview, that you can do that. We're going to teach you interview techniques. And what I notice each week, they always post the amount of money that they collect from the church from the week before. Average collection is about $114,000. Well, the second week that they did that, it went up to $124,000. And then the third week that they did that, it went up to $150,000. And this past week, it was up to $174,000. So the people see that their money is going someplace good, so they're willing to give something away. And even at our lowest point, you have to remember that there's always somebody worse off than we are, and that everyone has something that they can give. And, you know, again, sowing a seed doesn't just have to be your time. It could be your talents and your dollars as well. And just remember that money is active, and I truly hope that a lot of it, hundreds and thousands and even millions of it, will pass through your hands in your lifetime. And you should keep some of it, and you should save some of it, and you should spend some of it, but you also should share some of it. So make as much as you're able to, and give as much as you're able to as well. and plant some of those seeds in your own self-growth, and you need to do that in order to grow as well. So giving, it just does something to the human spirit. I know personally, you know, I'm not going to brag about things that I've done, but it just makes you feel so great. I'll give you one example. I was in an airport a couple weeks ago. It was late at night. I got off the tram. I was going down the escalator, and next to me was a woman, and she had a little girl with her, a little adorable, beautiful blonde girl, maybe 2.5 years old, and the woman was in army fatigues. And I don't know what her situation was. I don't know if she was going to war, coming from war. I don't know how much time that she had with that little girl. But I just took a $100 bill out of my wallet, and I handed it to her, and I said, thank you for serving our country. And her eyes just filled up with tears, and she said, ma'am, you don't have to do this. And I said, no, I want to give this to you, you know, spend it with your daughter, on your daughter. And, you know, I just had such a good feeling walking away, and it's something that I do often and also do things on a regular basis, contributing time and money. But if you want to feel great, think about, you know, the last time that somebody gave you something or did something nice for you, and it's just one of the best ways to grow. I don't know any healthy, wealthy, happy people who are not giving something away.
What they're not giving away is what they ask to be paid for, and that is such an important distinction, because you'll notice that Kelly is not giving away her consulting service. She's giving $100. Sure, that feels good and touches the human spirit. And if you go out and feed the homeless, you know what? You bond with people, and you're all feeling good. And somehow the word gets out that you're a good person, and it connects you with somebody else. Maybe that person knows somebody who wants to be a training client. And that's just the electricity that takes place. But the mistake that I see trainers make is they hear that message and they go, I'm going to do free sessions. People will realize I'm a good trainer, and sooner or later it's all going to come back to me. Well, if you keep doing free sessions, then people get to know you as the person who does free sessions. And nobody's then going to go, hey, I want to pay you. So recognize the distinction between putting good stuff out there and putting yourself in a place where nobody respects your value. Now, for the moment, I want to forget reality. I'm not asking you to live in a fantasy world, but I am asking you to accept that at this moment, you are at a fork in the road right now. If you're thinking, Kelly, she doesn't understand. I can't hand somebody $100. Number one, there's the word can't. And number two, she didn't ask you to. She's just asking you to find ways to put something out there, but to preserve the value of what you do for a living. So right now, just accept that you're at a fork in the road, very much as a prospect is when they consider training with you. You can get buried by your present. Take with you whatever financial burdens you carry in this moment, whatever worry has become a part of your habitual self-talk, and you can look at your circumstance as a necessary reality.
This line is now unmuted.
Which is really the state of being stuck. Or you can choose to accept that you can begin writing the script for your future right now. So there's the choice. You're at a fork in the road. Down one road, you stop. You're stuck. You're not going any further. The other road, big question mark. It's up to you to decide what lies down that road. Now, if at this point you have trouble, as most personal trainers, finding the boundaries between who you are and what you do, just pretend for the moment that your business is, in fact, the source of your prosperity. If it is, what does it bring you? Think for a minute. If your business becomes the source of your prosperity, if you could put yourself in that place, what does your business bring you? And if you're having trouble answering the question, this is a part of changing mindset. This should be simple to answer. And if it's not, it's okay. You just haven't conditioned yourself to think this way yet. If your business is the source of your prosperity, what does it bring you? Okay, now again, it's time to use the pen that I asked you to have handy. Write down one thing that would come to you because of your business. If your business is the source of your prosperity, I want you to write down just one thing that would come to you because of your business. And don't mistake this for being driven by money. I am not driven by money, but I welcome it. I respect the power it allows me. And I haven't any shame in accepting money in exchange for the value I deliver. Now, I realize your business brings you gratification, brings you emotional reward, brings you smiles, brings you hugs, and all of those wonderful emotional highs that keep us coming back. But just for now, I want you to be consider that your cell phone company won't accept a hug for payment. If your cell phone company calls you and says, you owe us $182, you go, I'm going to come down there and give you a hug. They're going to go, well, okay, but we're going to turn off your cell phone. And whether you pay a mortgage or rent or you have a bit of guilt for living with your parents, ultimately, you want to live in a place that makes you feel great every morning when you wake up. And that will come to you from your business if you allow your business to be the source of your prosperity. For some reason, there's an echo on the line. I don't know who unmuted and why that's happening, but if everybody could just make sure they're muted. Think about one thing your business can bring you if it works as you'd like. Something beyond emotions, and not to say the emotions will go away. I know it's bringing you the good, feel-good emotions, but something that comes to I'm going to ask everybody right now, please do this. Just say a letter of the alphabet when I count to three. One, two, three. Okay, somebody wasn't playing along because somebody's unmuted. I'm hearing a lot of noise going on. Somebody say a letter. Everybody say a letter of the alphabet when I count to three. One, two, three. Think about one thing your business can bring you if it works as you'd like. Something beyond emotion. Something that comes to you with money as the flowing energy that allows it to be yours. My business brought me the view that I see every morning when I wake up, and I love that view. I love that view. It came to me because of my business. My business brought me the neighborhood I live in where my daughter can ride her bike to the water park or to the town center. That came to me because of my business. It brought me the ability to travel around the world, to meet great people everywhere from Trinidad to Moscow, and it brings me the opportunity to pursue new ventures, each one potentially contributing to my prosperity, each one aimed at helping more people find fitness. That all comes to me because of my business. I am not my business. It is the source of my prosperity. I had some extreme medical expenses over the past few years. Unexpected. Not covered by insurance. I am thankful my business allowed me to meet those demands. It allows me to take vacations, to visit my friends in California or in North Carolina, to visit my family in New York, and when I go to New York, to stay at the Marriott Marquis in a suite on the 42nd floor, which allows my daughter and my parents actually grew up in New York, as did I, it allows them to enjoy New York City much as they would if they were visiting the city for the first time. That all comes to me because of my business. If you have children, you've watched some of the Disney movies. And a recurring theme in these movies is finding something that brings you wishes or brings you power. Aladdin found the genie who brought him riches and the ability to win over Jasmine, who I have to add is very, very hot. Of all the princesses, I think... never mind. Mulan had her magic dragon Mushu and a lucky cricket who helped her defeat the Huns, save China, and bring honor to her family. Hercules had Pegasus, the winged horse, who helped him prove himself to be a hero so he can be a god. The recurring theme is a vehicle to make wishes come true. Your business should be that vehicle. Now understand this. Aladdin did not become the genie. Mulan did not become the dragon, and Hercules did not become Pegasus. You should not become your business. You created it. Now you have to guide it, respect it, direct it, and know its power. You can own it, but you must never make the mistake of becoming it. Now, can anybody share an experience where you felt as if you and your business were hard to separate? If you can, just unmute and just tell me one little episode where there was a time where you felt like, you know what, it's hard for me to say who I am and what I do. It's as separate things. They're kind of cloudy and becoming the same. Has anybody had an experience like that? Star 6, say your name.
Amy.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Amy.
Was that Amy?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Amy, tell us about that experience.
Oh, I just actually got in on the phone call, so I wasn't sure what you said.
I said if anybody named Amy jumps in on this phone call, we are all going to applaud. Okay, the problem is everybody's muted. So right now everybody's applauding like crazy, Amy, and it's for you. Okay? But now I'm going to ask Amy to mute by hitting star 6. And I'm going to ask one other person, if you could just share one experience in your own life where you felt like people didn't seem to have respect for the fact that this is your business. It's not you. It's not who you are. Has anybody had that?
Hi, this is Jane.
Is it Jane?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Jane. You want to tell us about that experience?
Hi, Phil. Hi, everybody. Well, I can't tell you the number of times when I go to a networking event or go to a party. Because when you're at a networking event, of course, you're trying to build business and be a representative of your business. But when you go to a party and you're hanging out with your friends, and not unlike the example you cited, you know, somebody, when you say that you're a personal trainer, somebody will say, oh, can you do something about this pain in my neck? Or...
And wait, are they talking about their spouse?
Yeah, right?
Go ahead.
You know, they start talking about their own exercise program or their lack of an exercise program, and I have often said to people, I kind of feel like I'm taking confession. And, you know, this isn't the place for it. So.
Now, let me ask you a hard question. Let me ask you a really hard question.
Okay.
Can you take any responsibility for that? In other words, I know it happens to you. Can you take any responsibility for it? You know, think about this. You know, sometimes people see a doctor at a party, and they'll do the same thing, right? They're going to go, oh, you know what? I got this pain over here. What do you think it is? Or sometimes they see a lawyer at a party. But I think the doctor and the lawyer know where to draw the line. There comes a point that they go, you know what? If you want to talk about it, here's my card. Come into my office. And I think with a personal trainer sometimes, the trainer doesn't take responsibility for saying, enough is enough. You've crossed that line. Can you find that in yourself?
I guess it depends on the circumstance, but it's always hard to say no to people.
Huh?
When you're in the business of being nice all the time, when every moment of your workday is a customer service moment, and you always want to be helpful, you never know who that person is going to talk to who might come to you, and you know, in the gym or in the facility.
And this is a part. This is a part of where, when I say you, I really mean everybody, Jane. This is a part of where you need to respect your profession as something different than you. What I mean by that is, you can be nice. You can be very nice. You can be sweet. You could be humble. You could be warm. You could be loving. But your business is your business, and your business has value. And if they cross the line, it's not you being mean. It is you having respect for what you do for a living, much as a doctor would if somebody said, you know what, can you take out my appendix right now? You know, and it seems like a silly exaggeration to say that, but the doctor clearly knows the line between frivolous conversation or sizing it up to see if this is a medical issue and asking me to do what I do for a living. I'm not going out to the car getting my blood pressure cuff and my stethoscope. And I think with personal trainers, we allow that until we recognize that we are allowing it. And only then can we stop. So, and again, it's not aimed at you, that's aimed at everybody. I think it is vital that you separate who you are. I'm not saying don't be nice. I'm saying respect that you get paid for something. And you deliver value in exchange for that compensation. And if people are taking advantage of that and you are allowing it, then recognize that you are responsible. And we're going to come back to that concept. I appreciate you sharing that, Jane. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Here are the three primary challenges trainers face. Number one, they get stuck and they believe that present circumstance is necessary. Or worse yet, they believe that present circumstance is somehow tied to the future. Secondly, they fail to fully recognize their power to influence people. And thirdly, they believe something outside of themselves will change their outcome. Now, before we hang up today, I will shake up those crippling mindset feeders. I'll get you to get into your own head and rid you of those limitations. It starts with you recognizing that everything you've done up until this point was important. Even the things you want to kick yourself over, they were important. It also requires that you find the value in the uniqueness of who you are, what you've done, and what you've learned. Nobody else has had those same exact experiences or lessons. Now, we spoke about why we do what we do, and that leads to another discussion, one I'm going to ask Kelly to join in on. Kelly and I have shared both privately and publicly the frustration we experience when people ask a certain question, one that gets under my skin, and I will ask Kelly to introduce the question.
The question is, how do I do what you do? Phil and I get asked that question all the time. In fact, I was just at a seminar, a kettlebell training, a couple of weeks ago, and they went around the room, and everyone just said their name, and somebody came up to me and said, I've always wanted to meet you. I want to do exactly what you do. How do I do what you do? And you just stop and go, how do you do what I do? First of all, what do? I mean, I'm a personal trainer. I write, I teach, I consult, I edit, I speak. I, you know, travel around doing what my passion is. But how do I do it? It's been 22 years in the making, 22 years of hard work. And even still, you know, waking up at 4:40 every morning to lead a boot camp class and a lot of nights writing until 10, 11 o'clock at night. And it's a lot of hard work. It's networking. It's communicating. It's constantly being a student. It's taking the seminars. It's learning. It's reading. It's traveling. There's not any one magic thing that I did. I owned and operated health clubs for 14 years. I made a ton of mistakes when I owned and operated those health clubs. I ran a school for many years. I obtained 25 certifications in all different areas of health, fitness, wellness, lifestyle, coaching, psychology, mindset. I achieved 3 degrees in biology and sports science and cardiac rehabilitation. I interned. I mentored. You know, I spent a lot of money. I traveled all over to meet people. So it wasn't, you know, any one certification that I took or one person that I met or one coach that I hired. I've spent tens of thousands of dollars going to coaches. So there isn't one quick thing. So when people ask us that, you know, we almost have to laugh because that's what they're looking for. They want it quick. They want it easy. They want it magic. And I also have to laugh, and I don't laugh, but I more get upset when I see these ads that are sent out to you, to the trainers who are passionate, who want more, from people who call themselves gurus, who call themselves successful, yet there's no substance behind what they do. They don't have the experience. They don't have the achievement, yet they're trying to teach you how to do something based on something that they heard somebody else say or do that they're rehashing from a book or a seminar. So it gets really, really frustrating, and we genuinely want to help you, and we can help you, but it takes hard work. There is no shortcut. There is no easy road. Talk to anybody who's successful, and they'll tell you. I mean, you can watch all these infomercials, and it's easy for an uneducated, emotional consumer who's in pain to go, okay, I'm going to buy that gizmo or gadget or twister or supplement or whatever it might be. And as a trainer, I've fallen for some of those along the way, and I'm sure you have too. And one of the things we want to do is help you to recognize that those things don't work. Hard work works. Good systems work. Getting experience works. Waking up every day with a great attitude, that's what works. That's how you become like us. That's how you reach the top 1 and 2% of your industry. And it's possible. It's possible to elevate yourself.
If you're not presently living the dream, the first thing you have to do is escape your ego. What do you mean, Phil? What do you mean escape my ego? What does that mean? Well, many people say they're good because they don't want to admit that they're really not doing all that well, right? How are you? Good. How are you? Not bad. Sometimes that really means they're doing bad, but they got this ego. You weren't thinking they're doing bad when you asked the question, but somehow they felt they need to go, not bad, which really means pretty bad. I just don't want to admit it to you because my ego won't let me. That's the destructive shield of ego. It is the enemy of personal trainers. So get away from the how's it going, good, if that's representative of habitual thinking that deems you ordinary. If it, when people go, how's it going, if it isn't going the way you want, realize that there's not the least bit of shame in that. Realize that you're simply prepared to be better. You can take everything that happened up until this moment, right now, and deem it as your education. You can say everything until this very moment in time, right now, was my education. I have just completed my education. And now, You could literally create the future from this moment forward. In order to do that, your ego has to move out of the way. It's the only way you can accept responsibility. Responsibility. It's such a big word. It's such an important word. And when I use that word, I hyphenate it. Responsibility. There was a time that I wound up $250,000 in debt. Now, I'll tell you, it had nothing to do with doing anything bad, hurtful. In fact, talk about being a good person. That's what I was doing. I was being a good person. I was going out spreading the word of fitness, and I was doing really well, and I was traveling from city to city doing seminars and selling books and really doing nicely. And then an infomercial company came along, and they said, Phil, we want to do an infomercial. And I said, okay, and we signed a contract. And then what I really understood after a short while was they didn't want to take what they were seeing or what they were hearing. They wanted to take the entity that was selling products, which was me, and twist the message. They wanted me to say, it's quick, it's easy, it works like magic, and I couldn't do it. And it turned into this long, drawn-out dispute. They had $33 million, and I didn't. And we got into this horrible, draining lawsuit, and I wound up $250,000 in debt. Now, I'll tell you this. It threw me. It really threw me. But when the dust settled, it changed me. I decided I would not declare bankruptcy as everyone advised me to do, including my father, including my lawyer, said I'm not going to do it. I decided I would ethically earn my way out of debt. And I will tell you that that experience served me well. It changed my sense of what is financially possible. And that, in hindsight, was a welcome change. Now, if you had asked me prior to that, would you ever appreciate being $250,000 in debt? I'd say, absolutely not. But I'll tell you right now, I appreciate the experience. I appreciate what I learned from it. I appreciate what it did to me. It changed my sense of possibility. It had a major effect on my self-willingness to move past obstacles. Bankruptcy was the way to avoid the obstacle. I said, no, I can't. I don't know why I can't, but I can't. I don't like that idea. I'm going to have to live with it forever. So there's a tree in front of me, and I got to figure out how to move that tree. I had a major obstacle fall in front of me, and I responded. I was response-able. You are too. Kelly's house was flooded just about 90 days ago. Right, Kel?
Right. In fact, I am sitting out by my pool overlooking the golf course because right now I've got four contractors inside tearing up 2,500 square feet of mahogany floors, and they're tearing up tile, and they're taking off trim. And
Kelly was response-able. She didn't walk away from the problem. She didn't turn her house over to the bank because so many things were ruined. And you know what? That would have been okay in today's America. In a dependent society, which we happen to live in, where the government is expected to rescue or care for people, it's accepted, unfortunately, to blame the economy, to blame the banks, to blame Wall Street, or to blame other people for whatever comes your way. Or you can be different. You can be response-able. If the club you work for right now has taken a hit in selling memberships, you can blame the circumstance. You can blame the economy. You can blame the club. You can blame the manager. You can blame the salespeople. Or you can respond. How can you respond? I can give you 50 ways right now, but I won't. Because your response shouldn't be something I dream up. It should be something that will lead you to wherever it is that you want to land. If you don't yet know where you want to land, it's okay. Don't worry. This is only the first of 8 days. You have 7 more days to figure it out. And if that's too much pressure, then honestly, you haven't yet grasped what I'm saying about responsibility. You are responsible for deciding where you want this personal training career to take you. Is that pressure? Yeah, maybe it is, but you're able to do it. So do it. Respond appropriately. Think of something in your life that once seemed overwhelming, something that once seemed stressful, something that might have seemed insurmountable. Think of something now, okay, something that is history. Think of something in your life that once seemed like there's no way you could get past this. Something that you now realize you could have dealt with in a much more sensible and practical manner than you did at the time. Because in the moment, you felt like, there's no way I'm going to get past this. But now, in hindsight, you don't know. I had many options. Maybe it was a relationship breakup. Maybe it was the loss of a job. Maybe it was an injury or an unexpected event. Think about how upsetting it was, how disruptive it was. And then think about how, if you could go through the experience again, you'd handle things differently. Because you learned from the experience. And if you haven't yet discovered how it served you, you just need some new perspective. Remember, everything up until now was your education thus far. This 8 days will link together your education and the achievement of your goals. Get that pen again. Take a moment and list some of the things you own that you have great affection for or pride in. Just do it right now. I'm going to give you 45 seconds. And don't just listen. Remember responsibility. You need to be immersed in this. You need to participate. So if your pen isn't moving, pick up your pen and get it moving. List some of the things you own that you have great affection for or pride in. It might be your car. Now, I know some of you think, my car, that's shallow. There's nothing shallow or shameful about it. It gets you where you want to get to. It may be the representation of the good you've done for people. Just write some things you have great affection for or pride in that you now own. It might be your husband or your wife. No, you don't own that person, but you can take ownership of the cultivation of the relationship. You were responsible. You had to want it in order to pursue it. And if you have a rewarding relationship today, take pride in the fact that you, to a great degree, created it. If you have your own studio, take pride in it. If you don't have a studio, but you have a professional relationship with a health club, take pride in that. You made it happen. If you explore the lessons of your life, you'll find everything that you now own or control or appreciate was once a wish or a want. You'll also realize that things that once felt challenging are now manageable and were necessary parts of your growth. So with that perspective, you'll realize that the things that challenge you today are only prompts for you to move forward, for you to respond, for you to get out of discomfort, and for you to be response-able. I mentioned that compensation should be a fair and just exchange for the value you deliver. And your value is something you can shape. And if you decide what your value should be, assuming you are competent, you can quickly develop the confidence to command that value. Now, again, for some of you, I know it's scary because you're going, well, I'd like to say that my value is $100 an hour, but I can't. There's but and can't ganging up in the same sentence. Get rid of those words and just decide what your value should be. And if you find peace with that, if you go, yeah, not only should that be my value, that is my value, then fantastic. If you're going, that should be my value, but it's not yet, there's a but. And you can change it by saying, it will be. I'm going to do whatever it takes to develop the confidence to command that value. A lot of you are struggling to some degree because your income isn't where you'd like it to be. So a part of the process is going to be increasing income. And for a personal trainer, there are three ways to increase income. One, more clients. Now, for the long term of the three, that's the least appealing because there is a ceiling. You can't keep pursuing new clients because you're limited by your energy or the number of hours in a day. But it is one of the ways to increase income. So if right now you want more clients than you have, it's certainly a viable way to increase income, more clients. The second, more client frequency. That would mean more actions per client. If there's a client that you see once a week, if you see that client twice a week now and that client pays, clearly you're increasing income. So the first way, more clients. The second way, more client frequency. And the third way, more client spending. That means more dollars per client action. So in addition to the thinking you're going to do, okay, in addition to considering the words can and but, here's your directive to complete before the end of today. I'm going to give you three questions right now and write them down. The directive is simple. After the call, answer the questions. That's it. Here we go. Number one. of all of your clients, which client is the most influential? Of all of your clients, which one is the most influential? Now, whatever question you want to ask me about that question, throw it away. If you want to go, do you mean in terms of business? No, I don't mean that. It can be. I just mean, of all your clients, which one is the most influential? Question number two, which client could afford to train more frequently than he or she does? Whatever questions you have that associate with that question, throw them away. Just answer the question. Which client could afford to train more frequently? This is not a yes or no question. It requires an answer, and it's a client name. So question one, of all your clients, which one is the most influential? Question two, which client could afford to train more frequently? And question three, what are you worth in terms of a session? And why should you charge that per session from this day forward? Now, the first two questions simply require a name. Okay, of all your clients, which client is the most influential? Tom, right? It's just the name. Which client could afford to train more frequently? Betty. The third question is going to take some thought. Maybe it's a paragraph. Maybe it's a page. Whatever it is, devote the time and energy to it. This is a key to generating more income. And I know it's not about money. But if more income is going to be a part of getting you to a better place, then do this. So the third question again, what are you worth for a session? And why should you charge that per session from this day forward? Now, if you say something like, I'm worth $50, but I can't charge that, realize what you're doing. But and can't are showing up. So maybe that means you're not worth $50 a session. So be honest here. Push the ego to the side. What are you worth for a session? And why should you charge that per session from this day forward? I know you should. You have to know that you should. The answers to these questions will allow you to see three immediate vehicles for enhancing the three areas of increasing profit. One will reveal a step toward more clients. Whoever is the most influential will be a vehicle to get you more clients. I'm not asking you to use that vehicle. I'm just asking you to know it exists right now. Another will reveal a step toward more client actions. I'm not asking you to ask any client to train more frequently. I just want you to identify who can. That's all. And the third will prepare you to command more dollars per each client action. As far as the three challenges I mentioned earlier, we're going to wrap this up by going through the three. Let's go to the first. I said trainers get stuck. Answer the three questions that I just provided you and catch the buts and can'ts, and you're instantly unstuck. But Phil, no, you can't say but, Phil. Get rid of the but. I can't. No, you can't. So answer the three questions. That's all I'm asking you to do. And catch the buts and can'ts, and you're immediately unstuck. Now remember, it might not be comfortable at first, but liken that to the soreness a client may feel after a challenging workout session. You know that they have to get through the soreness because it's leading to growth. Now the second challenge I mentioned was that trainers fail to recognize their power to influence. When you answer the question of what you're worth and why you should charge that, you're going to find yourself response able. If you can answer why you should, then you are able to respond. And while the old neural habits, the old habits that have been conditioned inside your central nervous system will tell you you can't ask for that kind of money, or they'll tell you you should, but Phil doesn't know your clients, you'll recognize what's happening. Can't and but are showing up and messing with you. So you'll begin to confront it. and you will then open up to your new power to influence. So remember, this is only day one. We barely started. So first, I said trainers get stuck, get unstuck. Two, I said trainers fail to recognize their power to influence. Answer that third question. And then thirdly, they believe something outside of themselves will change their outcome. You're going to accept that you have the power to change things. And you'll find that the driving force comes not from somewhere outside of you, but from within. We will leave it at that. Tomorrow, you'll receive an email with some directives for day two. And then on Thursday, we will reconnect in a teleconference. There'll be some opportunity for you guys to participate. But right now, all I want you to do is be cognizant of but and can't and really devote some time to answering those three questions. I don't mean a lot of time. I just mean some time. I have learned that growth is gradual and incremental. And sometimes it doesn't even feel like you're growing. You know, just like when somebody comes in and they go, I want to get bigger. And they train with you for a week and they go, I'm not bigger. You go, I know. I know you're not. But let's talk in 8 weeks and we'll talk some more in 12 weeks and we'll talk some more in 6 months. Because growth is gradual. And it comes in increments. And I've personally come to live by two words that serve as the foundation of everything I do and everything I empower and everything I inspire others to do. So I will conclude every teleconference with these two words from Kelly and from myself. Until we speak again, here are those words. Be better.